Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I'm your host Stephen Murphy, as always, and I'm here with the regular rugby crew that is Sam and Westy. No Shane Bolton this week. We were back with Westy, but that's still hey Westy. That's great. We still love you. You know, you're no Shane Bolton, but that's okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm nothing like Shane Bolton. Although, I may sometimes delude myself into thinking that I could have been if I made better life decisions.
Who knows? Westy introduced himself as, "Hi, I'm Westy. I'm no Shane Bolton, but I'll try my best."
That's what my fiance says to me every evening. You're okay, yeah, but you're no Shane Bolton.
My fiance definitely did highlight how handsome he is, and you know what? She's not wrong. He's a handsome chap. But yeah, got some good feedback on that podcast, so thanks to everyone who listened to it. Hope you all enjoyed it and still there if you haven't heard it. Really nice guy, especially for 23 years old. I never get over that part. I keep forgetting that when I assume someone's a professional athlete, I just assume they're older than me, and it's just not the case anymore.
Still think you're like 23 or 24.
No, it's not that. I think it's just the fact that I'm like, how are these people so successful at such a young age? You know, which is definitely more of a reflection of my maybe bad career choices. But it was good to have him on. Anyway, how are you, Sam?
Not too bad. Just kind of, I was a bit sick for the last 2 weeks, so I took it easy enough at the weekend. So better now, which is the best feeling. You know, when you're better after being sick and you're like, suddenly life is actually so much easier than walking around with a massive head cold. So,
but then you take it for granted. It's like, you know, when you can breathe properly out of your nose and you're like, I will never take it for granted again when I can breathe. And then you forget after about an hour. So, yeah.
Straight away.
Yeah, straight away. Westy, how was your weekend?
My weekend was good. I had a few days off last week. So I was out hiking in Connemara, which is lovely. It was cold, but it was beautifully clear and fresh. And then I listened to the podcast, of course, as well, Shane Bolton. It was really, really good chat. And I had my own match there on Sunday. So we had a fairly jammy win the last minute of the game against Port Dumna. I don't want to go through this, but we basically had a penalty in the last minute that we narrowly kicked from the halfway line, narrowly missed it. But one of the Port Dumna lads tried to distract the kicker. So the referee awarded a retake. And we got the second time round and won by a point.
Oh, I love to hear that. That's the stuff that keeps, that makes me so happy. Right away. No, but that's bullshit. Don't be trying to, you know, put off the kicker. That's called karma right there, bitches. Karma.
That's one of them that's just never, ever called. And then it gets called last second of the game.
It's like the Australia-New Zealand a couple of years ago when Nick White got punished for not taking the penalty, wasn't it? Or someone else got and New Zealand ended up winning them the bloody championship. But yeah, it's technically not wrong, but it's just, is it ever called? That's the real issue with it. But that's refereeing in rugby.
Especially not in J2. Like in J2, they probably, it's like basketball. They actually encourage you to try and put off the kicker.
Absolutely. I was home for the weekend. My friend, The Chunk, a.k.a. Garrett, turned 30 at the weekend. So he's the last of our core group there to turn 30. So yeah, we're all old men, but it's good to be back home. Good crack on Saturday night. And not too bad yesterday, but then I'm in the office this week. It's my connect week for work, so the fear was doubled when you're like, oh, I can't just like roll out of bed at 10 to 9 tomorrow morning and just lounge around the house. I have to go in and actually, you know, be a competent worker. But it was still a good crack, but still got a chance to watch the Connacht game, which we will get stuck into now, which, yeah, well, as I said, we'll get stuck into it. Leon defeat Connacht 34 points to 20 on Saturday. Connacht's future in this competition pretty much rolled out from them now, apart from maybe a victory against Bristol this weekend. But
even then, we have to beat Bristol by more than what Saracens beat Leon, or Saracens have to be beaten by Leon or something like that. Yeah, they have to be beaten by Leon. We have to get a bonus point and deny Bristol any points. It's mathematically possible, but only because this format is ridiculous.
So
four teams out of six.
You're telling me there's a chance. What if Bolton scores seven tries? You can't say that he won't, Sam. You can't say that he won't.
But if he scores seven tries, we will have done as much as we can possibly do as a team. The defense would need to step up and stop them scoring four, which would very big ask if it's a free flowing game, which allows Bolton to score seven. And then we'd also need Leon to beat Saracens.
Again, not impossible is what we're saying. But let's get stuck into the game. Overall, I would say the performance was pretty good. I think, again, maybe not looking at the scoreline, but let's highlight the positives first before we get into the negatives. I'll start off with, I think defensively, that's the best we've looked all year, I think, especially in open play. again, as a Connacht fan, you have to caveat it was still 34 points. But most of that scoring came from sort of the power and the pick and go. Whereas in open play, I thought we shut them down really, really well. The first 10 minutes, I was like, we're going to win this game because Leon looked so average. And we looked pretty good in the first 10 minutes, especially with Sean Johnson, stretching the legs. But I thought we, like, especially the likes of Andrew Smith, who still hasn't played a ton, I thought he shot up in the line, defensive line, really well when he had to, caused Leon all types of problems in terms of passing lane, shutting that down. And unfortunately, we just kind of got outpowered in a lot of ways. But I thought defensively, yeah, I think Sammy said in the WhatsApp, Scott Farley's system looks like it's really clicking, which is exciting for the next kind of couple of months and the URC running. But that's one. Start with positives. Wesley, I'll throw it to you. Can you start with a positive?
I'll start with a positive that I text you guys to say we scored in what we often call the championship minutes. You know, we scored just before the break at a half and then managed to hold them out and not concede. And then we scored just at the start of the second half as well. I mean, at that point, I kind of thought we were in the ascendancy and we would have had a bit of confidence behind us to go on. I thought the tries we did score were well worked. I agree that defence is improving, but there are still areas that I'm left wanting. The problem is the context of this game makes you look at it in a different light, right? Before this game, we all thought, like, you know, a win was an outside chance. You know, going to Leon and getting a win wasn't likely, but we could still do it. You know, they're not doing great in the top 14, but their performances in Europe have actually been quite strong. So it was maybe, you know, it was possible, not probable. But then, yeah, when you look at something like kind of, again, in the first half, I think we scored every time we got into the 22. And then in the second half, we kind of weren't able to replicate that. After we got the try at the start of the half, we spent a lot of time camping their 22. And we did well at times, but it's kind of worrying then when we can't start turning those, we had a lot of time their 22 that we didn't turn into points. So I thought they played well. I thought they stayed in the game really well. We stayed in the fight pretty much up until the end. I think it was just, you know, an away win in France was always going to be really difficult. It's kind of the other results now that kind of mark out and this accumulation of points that we've had against us. But I thought overall it was a pretty decent performance. We were kind of 1 or 2% off, I think, not even taking something of this game, but maybe winning it.
Yeah, that's fair. Sam, I'll throw to you for a positive.
I'd say what you said. I actually was more impressed maybe than it sounds like Westy was with the defence. I think there's a glaringly obvious part, but I don't actually think that's a defensive system thing. I think that's just literally our size competing against Bulls, Saracens, the likes of this Leon and maybe Bordeaux. Like we just don't have that power and size, and I don't think, you know, day to day in the league we need that, but it is something. If you want to compete in Champions Cup, you're going to have to try and get somewhere. But I thought the positive was when we had the ball, when we managed to get more control of the ball in the second half, we did actually look like asking a lot of questions, and we ended up scoring, we scored, but we looked like we were causing concern to them. In the first half, we scored two tries from two possessions of three possessions in the entire half, as far as I counted when I rewatched it. One was a wonder try from outside, like from, you know, 50 meters out, but the other was a good, well-worked try. Other than that, we had no ball, and we need to work out a way of getting control of the ball when the team is bigger than us and bullying us, because when we had the ball, we looked like we were moving them around. So my positive is that, yeah, the defense is good, but I also thought the attack structure, the attack is starting to take place. It's now just a matter of trying to get that attack more on the ball. And I know sometimes that can leave you desperate and trying to run from anywhere, which I think we weren't doing too much, but we were at points not kicking away, and then we kicked away once or twice when we shouldn't have. So I think it is starting to come together, and I was impressed with the period maybe of about the last 5 minutes in the first half and then maybe 20 or 25 minutes of the second half. I was really impressed with how we managed that and how we were playing there. But overall, I think the glaringly obvious problem for me is that we just don't have a way of getting control of the ball. And that was just something Leon just wanted to own it and just make not let us play and then use their power and tire us out and get through us that way.
Yeah, let's talk about some negatives. So I'm on a negative ledge here, guys. I need you to talk me off it. Because, like, thinking about that game, I was just kind of like, this is why Connacht are, you know, the fourth kind of best team in Ireland. We could argue to her, I'm not, whatever. But, like, Leon just have big, powerful ball players, and Connacht will never have those type of players because they cost so much money. And at the end of the day, we can have all the talent in the world and all that, but rugby's a collision game, and they won the collisions. They dominated our scrum, and they picked and go from and we like. My point has been like there was no way we could stop what they were doing, and no matter who was in the pitch, Bundy, Finley, I don't think it would have mattered. And that's again comes back to like these players cost a lot of money. Connacht, they're never going to come to Connacht, and we're just going to shut down the podcast. We're going to stop supporting and just walk away. So I'm on the ledge, guys. Pull me off it if you can.
Westy, are you pulling or are you pushing?
I don't know. Look,
are you alongside me, Westy? Are you on the ledge with me?
No, because I'm always going to go back to the fact that I don't think we need to be in the Heineken Cup or the Champions Cup. We need to be competing at this level. And I fully believe that continued exposure at this level will not only yield the financial results that makes it possible for us to maybe not acquire those big, heavy ball-carrying players, those big physical specimens you're talking about, Steve, but maybe to hold on to them. Maybe to hold on to the likes of a Joe Joyce, to hold on to Darren Murray as he develops into the kind of physical machine that he's becoming, to hold on to Finlay Beelam, to hold on to these other players that are showing great promise and great potential and that, you know, but by all accounts are the kind of backbone of our squad at the minute. So I think it's important to be in it, and it's important to give a good account of ourselves. And again, I think all of these results are marred by just how heavily we lost to Bordeaux in the first round. But for me, the URC is the goal. The URC needs to be our main focus. Like I say, we want to give a good account of ourselves in Europe, but the point is that we guarantee ourselves Europe year in, year out. It is difficult to build momentum in the Champions Cup when you're going over and back from Champions Cup to Challenge Cup to Challenge Cup. Now, it would be a more successful tournament from a Connacht perspective if we got into the Challenge Cup and then were able to kind of make a push for that trophy. I mean, now in the next round, I don't mean if we started off in the Challenge Cup. I mean, I think it's the fourth place in each pool going to the Challenge Cup.
Fifth place in each pool. Four go through, fifth go, and sixth get nothing.
Okay, so yeah. So it would be like to go to Challenge Cup and then give another strong kind of ourselves, I think would be important. But for me, the URC will always be the focus. We need to make sure that we're going to qualify for this competition again next year. So I'll hold on to the fact that we beat Munster last week, or 2 weeks ago. I'm still pretty happy about that. And if we beat Cardiff now during the Six Nations, I'll be pretty happy about that. I won't lose sleep over Europe. It's a competition of the biggest and the strongest teams in Europe. The French teams, commit to it in varying degrees, but at the end of the day, there's a reason to lose are such dominant figures, and there's reason Saracens are such dominant figures, and because they have the money to acquire these players and to fight on both fronts, let's say. So, I would just say, look, it's Europe. All we need to do is give a good account of ourselves. I think we gave a pretty decent account of ourselves in Lyon. I think we played some really good rugby. Okay, there were some mistakes, there's some gaps. But we have improved as this competition has gone on. And we've also scored 5 tries in England for the first time ever against, arguably one of the top. But we couldn't score 5 tries in Newcastle last year, but we did it against Saracens. So I think that already shows development and progression of the squad. Bristol is a huge game next week for reasons off the pitch as well as on the pitch. So, yeah, I look forward to that game. But I'm focused on the URC. If we don't qualify for Heineken Cup next year, then sorry, I keep calling Heineken Cup. I'm always going to do that. I still call them Opal Fruits as well. and Twitter.
Twitter, yeah. I'm never calling it X. Never, not a hope.
Lads down road forever. So as long as we maintain our league position and guarantee ourselves qualification, then I'm okay with it. We had a tough group this time. If we can perform a little better in the league, we can get a better draw.
Look, and you're totally right. And I think what gets me down is like, it just kind of reminds you when you're in these competitions how far off being one of those teams is for Connacht. Like, so many things have to change for Connacht to become, a contender for a Champions Cup kind of thing. And I would love for Connacht to become that team at some stage, but I just don't see it ever happening because it's like that's what gets disheartening. Like, the lads obviously go out and they're trying to play best and they play hard, and like some of the tackles went in defensively were amazing, but it's like, the cards are stacked against you, as in just like with the whole like ecosystem of rugby and in Ireland and what Leinster and stuff like that. And not to be like whingy, but like it's just kind of it was just kind of a stark realization of you know, where we do stand in the pecking order a little bit. But I don't know, Sam, I'm sorry to bring such negativity to this podcast.
No, I agree with you completely. And I agree with Westy. Myself and Westy have spoken at length about this before, where I think, you know, being in the Champions Cup is a bonus that we want to do continuously. For one, in a book balancing exercise to try and keep those players, keep the top level players that we have, you know, keep them around to attract more players. We've been linked in the past. I know it fell through, but with, you know, Australian international props, and we brought over some good, unearthed some gems, but we've also, you're able to attract more players if you're in this continuously and you make a good showing of yourself, you put yourself in that shop window. So I think if you want to develop to such a stage that you are competitive in this tournament, you have to be in it from day one. And then in pro sports, there's competitions all around the world that have teams that are, you know, more capable of winning most knockout, most championship tournaments, Champions League, the World Cups in soccer and in rugby and this. And then in leagues, every competition has about four or five genuine contenders, one or two outside shots, and then a few that are trying to pull themselves into that outside shot territory. And that's where we're at. You know, last year we got through to the knockouts for the first time ever. You want to try, or not last year, sorry. Was it the year before last? I can't even remember when. It was last year we got it through. Yeah, it was last year.
Year before.
We got through to the knockouts for the first time ever. So that's what you want to do. You want to try and build on that and just continue and just solidify your place in that 5 to 8 range in the league. Build on that, bring in some more players, get up into that 2 to 5 range in the league, you know, contend for the league. And there's an outside shot that at some point something changes. You don't know what player is going to be unearthed. You don't know what lad's going to sign for you. You don't know what investment might come or what bounce of a ball might happen for you, but you can't win it if you're not in it. And I don't think we're near there right now, but I don't think many teams in the cup genuinely are. I think there's about 4 or 5 actual contenders and then a few teams that are like, if stuff goes well, we'll be able to capitalize on this. But I wouldn't be too downhearted about it. You grow up watching this Champions Cup and thinking, oh, that's, yeah, everyone's competitive, but realistically they're not. And it's quite often the same teams. And then teams make a break for it. I know it's heavily invested in terms of money-wise, but La Rochelle have come kind of from nowhere to where they are powerhouses of Europe now. And that happens with a little bit of investment and a change in emphasis or change in top-level management or a good crop of players. You just don't know how it's going to work. So I'm not too downhearted about it because I always saw it as a bonus. And I think that we were punching in this league. If you look at what Bordeaux did to Saracens at the weekend, you know, they put 55 on them, and then Lyon, they're qualified already, and then Bulls are in our group. Bears are huge investment in that. Like, the games we're shipping a lot of points in, they're games against teams that I genuinely think that we are punching at the moment, being in competitive games with them. But you're not going to get to their level without being competitive in those games and seeing it out. And, you know, the experiences of Saracens, the experiences of Bordeaux and Lyon, these will stand to this group of players, this young crop of players coming through, all of that. So I'm downhearted because you don't like losing, and you don't like losing heavily, and you don't like going out of competitions. But I, every year, supporting Connacht, want top 8 to get into this competition. Not because I think we're going to win it, but because I think it financially benefits Connacht and it'll be allow them to keep players. So that to me is the main focus. And personally, your Challenge Cup run would be cool, but there's some tough teams in it and it's knockout rugby. You just don't know what'll happen. You don't want to put all your eggs in a knockout basket. Ireland keep doing that with World Cups and getting knocked out in quarterfinals. That's not what you want to do. For me, I'd actually almost prefer to come 6th and to just do a proper run at the league, not risk any injuries, not have those aways. If you have a good, solid run in the Challenge Cup, yeah, that's brilliant, but there's no guarantee it'll happen. So for me, the resources should go to the league and to try and get ourselves back in the Champions Cup for next year.
Yeah, no, you're right. He's about right. He's a top man off the ledge. I'm back a couple of feet off it now, so that's good. But let's talk about some performances actually on the pitch. I thought Tadhg McIlroy, aka Dylan Tierney-Martin, as all the TNT commentators kept stating, literally until about the 75th minute, when
then they called him like McElroy. Yeah,
it was a poor showing from the TNT guys, and like that's like behind a paywall. You have to pay for that channel. But look, that's a different story. But I think Sammy made a good point in the WhatsApp. Like, he played a long time because of Owen the Butler on the bench. It's a tough game to bring him in, you know, for his kind of Champions Cup debut. But Tadhg McIlroy, I thought, was brilliant. I thought Sean Jansen, we saw glimpses of what he can be. We seen him in person a few weeks ago, just having a coffee, and he is a big boy.
Unit.
He is a unit, and he showed that bit of turn of pace as well. But I thought, you know, some real bright sparks from him. We have to highlight Tom Daly. I thought he was absolutely brilliant all game, and you know, I think this is his second game all year he's played this season. And he looked sharp as a tack. You know, we talk about physicality, like he's as physical as it comes. He's what, 6'5"? He's bulky, he's fast, and he's not afraid to throw himself about. And the pass for Sean Johnson's try was absolutely excellent. You know, he knew a big hit was coming, he still popped the pass off. Thought he was absolutely brilliant. The shot, Shane Bolton, again, looked absolutely fantastic. And what I loved about him is he can, again, sometimes you do remember he is so young, because every time he made a big tackle, he was just like jumping up, celebrating, because he was just so happy with life, which is great to see. Like, you know, I was actually saying this the other day on a radio show that I do here locally, but you know, we can't forget that some rugby players, I'm sure, don't love playing rugby. It's just a job to them, and you know, that's fair enough. They're talented at it and all that. Shane Bolton loves playing rugby, and you can tell that by his body language and everything. And thought he was absolutely brilliant. I thought Andrew Smith as well showed pretty well, because we don't know what we have with him yet, but I think showed good signs there. Anyone else kind of jump out to you guys that impressed you, Westy? Anyone you want to highlight that I haven't mentioned already, maybe?
I agree on Bolton, obviously. I think he was very impressive again this week. Joe Joyce as well, I think it's just been such a fantastic signing for us. I genuinely found myself thinking during the game, and I understand I'm extremely biased by this, but wondering, is he far away from being called into the Ireland squad? I mean, not in terms of he's not going to start any games as Six Nations, but he played under 20s for Ireland. He has a 2-year deal with Connacht, and he might be a smart capture for the Ireland squad to get in and bring that again. Second row, I don't start him above likes of Byrne or Ryan, or maybe even Henderson for that matter. Well, maybe Henderson, I'm not 100% sure yet, but...
I think it's just his age goes against him. Like, he's 29, nearly 30, and you've got the likes of Joe McCarthy, Ryan Baird, like even Tom Ahern. There's a good few young lads coming through. I think that's the only thing goes against him for that.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying that he's definitely going to be in an Ireland squad, but you know, he definitely, from a Connacht perspective, he brings a lot of what we're missing, which is what the phrase we always use is a bit of a bastard. That, you know, Connacht just don't really seem to have necessarily or historically have. And he is this big, kind of strong ball carrying, again, like, not literal bastard, but like that type of character that we just, again, we don't seem to see too many of. I thought Prendergast was great as well. I think he's having a great season for us. Butler, I think his work rate around the pitch is really impressive. Again, I'm not saying anybody has had a perfect performance, but yeah, I think, like, a lot of people said this was a weak Connacht team. I don't think it was a weak team. It was just an experimental team. Like, even Michael McDonald was pretty decent for his first start. Then you have that kind of rotation of Carthy and JJ at fullback. So I thought that was interesting to see. I thought that worked relatively well. It could be an interesting thing going forward. But you then wonder, I know we're short in injuries in terms of fullback, but like, you wonder, where is John Porch? Like, I mean, he's a couple of shows of fullback. Is he
injured? Yeah, it was announced today he's a knee injury, so he's out for a while.
Okay.
He'll be back soon, though.
But my point is that JJ is seems to be a decent option now at fullback that can cover when we have these kind of injury problems.
Did you look at Tom Daly at fullback? No, like, he played a good bit of wing for us his first year. I know they liked Smith and they liked McNamara in preseason, but I think Tom Daly he's got the stature and a boot for fullback anyway, and he's tough as nails. So
what about Sean Johnson?
Just bouncing off lads. While Westy was saying about Joyce, sorry, I actually wouldn't be surprised if the captaincy goes to Joyce next year, because I don't think Cardi has nailed on starter as of next year. I thought when JJ moved to 10 and Cardi came off around 60, I thought we just looked a little more fluid. So I wouldn't be surprised if the captaincy changes hands. And Joyce captained Bristol a lot, and by all accounts is extremely vocal in and around the dressing room, serious presence. So I wouldn't be surprised if he got that captaincy, because I know coaches tend to like a second row captain as well,
and he's literally played nearly every week, so he's always there or thereabouts. But just an update on the Niall Murray. So I did some digging a little bit, but he has been super available and super fit. It is not carrying a knock or a niggle, so just not getting a look in, it seems, with the current coaching staff. So definitely something that we need to keep an eye on. We're hoping to have Pete Wilkins on in a couple of weeks. We're working on that at the moment, but definitely something that we can ask him, because there's definitely a reason for this. It's not because Pete Wilkins doesn't raid Niall Murray. Like, that's not, that can't be the reason, but it is just seems a bit strange.
Bernard Jackman mentioned last week on their podcast that Darren Murray is physically more imposing than Niall just naturally. And I know when we spoke to Niall on the podcast, he said he struggled to put weight on, but he was really trying to put a bit of weight on during COVID. But that Murray just has a bit more physical presence about him. And that was why that's why he was starting ahead of him. And then if you look at like Oisin Dowling kind of started whenever he's been fit as well this year, maybe Wilkins is just going for a bit of bulk. And like we said on this podcast, you know, you do need bulk and size if you want to be competitive. Like, you looked at how successful Ahern at Munster has been moving to six. You know, is there an opportunity maybe look at Niall moving to six? And then when Josh Murphy comes back next year, kind of solidify down him as a second row. And then you've got Josh Murphy, Joe Joyce, Darren Murray and Oisin Dowling behind him. Like, that's a good group of locks there. And if Niall can transform, because he's got the athleticism to be a six, could be the making of him. You know, I just jot that one down. Let Pete Wilkins know my thoughts.
Yeah, no, look, I would agree with you in a lot of ways, but it's the how little we've seen of Niall, which is the weird thing. Like, it hasn't been like, oh, every second or third game he's starting. Has he started one game this year? I think he started one, maybe.
He's been on the bench a good bit, and he's, yeah, he's had good cameos and he's come off as well. So it has been surprising. But
this has been a second row that even by non-Connacht fans has been tipped to be like potential international lock at some stage. And like last year, he had a breakout season, and yet he just can't seem to get a look in. It's just, again, we'll put the question to Pete Wilkins if he does come on and ask about it, because it just seems, as I said, there has to be a reason for it. It's not just because, you know, Pete Wilkins is like, oh, I forgot Niall was there. I didn't even know he was there. Sorry about that. Yeah, so that's just wanted to highlight that as well. Great to see Owen de Butler making his kind of Thomas Cup debut. I thought Sam Elo looked pretty good when he came on as well. And Matthew Devine as well making his debut in Champions Cup too. Shane James came on, made a great tackle, and then unfortunately had to go off injured. But Shane Jennings definitely put on a lot of size as well. You can see that when he's on the pitch too. But yeah, I think I agree, Wesley. It wasn't like a team sent over to be slaughtered. Definitely a team that had the chance of winning, but realistically, you know, they were given a couple of a game time there, the players that wouldn't normally maybe. In a game.
One or two last minute changes as well throws it all in.
Andrew was sick, and then Tierney Martin got an injury, but still played 75 minutes according to the commentators. So fair play to him for that.
And a try.
And Andrew who was it? What was it? Andrew Wilson? Like, come on, like, that's just basic shit. But yeah, we'll move on from the Connacht game. But yeah, disappointed. But look, it is what it is. We move on to Ulster. They hosted the Giants of Toulouse, and they got a bit of a spanking. They got double scored, 48 points to 24 to Toulouse. But in a kind of a rarity, especially in the modern fan era, Sam, Ulster fans didn't even seem like upset or annoyed. They just kind of said, yeah, we absolutely got buzzsawed here. Like, we came up against a team that was in flying form, that just were absolutely, you know, hitting their stride, and there was nothing we can do, which is refreshing, because normally it's the referees are against us, or, you know, Dan McFarlane has to go. This was just, you know, we got absolutely
plastic pitch.
This was just, you know, hands up, we got beaten by the better team.
Yeah, I think that just how good the likes of DuPont was just made it so much more palatable for the Ulster fans to just go, look, we were just beaten by an absolutely class team that will have eyes on going through and winning this tournament. I think Ulster, you know, they've come through a bad patch and then had a little bit of a good patch, but in the back of their minds, they know that that good patch was probably a bit above where they are, and that bad patch was a bit below where they are, and they've kind of settled there, and they put themselves in with a chance of getting through. Quinn's most likely going to rest a lot of players next week, so they're still in good position in the Champions Cup. So I don't think that they're too disappointed by being beaten by that team. Like, it's, you're looking at that Toulouse team, the way that they played, and you can't really complain. I don't think, you know, Ulster were particularly bad. I don't think anything really went wrong. It was just that they were beaten by a better team. And often that is hard to do. Like, you know, I sit here on podcasts sometimes that you two are like, no, we should have beat Sarries. And I'm like, no, like, they were a better team. And it is hard to take as a fan that can be the case. But in this case, I think star-studded Toulouse team comes to town and just runs riot. And it makes it a little easier for them.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case here. But Wesley, a joy to watch Toulouse in full flight.
Yeah, definitely. It's just, I think I texted you guys during the game, like, just the way they, like, keep the ball alive, the way they pass the ball, the way they move the ball in general. It's just, like, even when it wasn't coming off for them, it was still Like, I sat down, this was game four of the day, you know, and you know, like I love a good long day of rugby. But sometimes by game four, you'd be kind of like, you know, you'd be drifting in and out of it, making cups of tea, you'd be doing other stuff. Like, I couldn't take my eyes off it, even when it was, you know, even when they were ahead by 30 points, the kind of confidence and the kind of natural, like ball handling ability that I know it's not natural. I know it, they're trained to be Jesus, but like it just appears so natural and so spontaneous, and just like their ability to, as I say, to move the ball and keep it alive and to run the ball, like it's just, yeah, it was just lovely to watch. As I say, even when it wasn't necessarily coming off, and even when it, you know, even when they were 30 points up and the game was over, I kind of found myself kept getting sucked in and kind of enthralled by just how, what a joy they are to watch, really, to be honest.
Yeah, they are. They're a different class. And we'd probably have a highlight on this podcast for just how badass it is that DuPont's just going to go off and play sevens. Like, just like it's nothing. You know what I mean? That is pretty baller shit, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, and the fact that, like you hear he's going to have to play sevens, you think, oh, yeah, we'll probably start to not see him play anymore. But he's still there playing, you know, 70 minutes for Toulouse. He's still playing week in, week out. Like, at what point is this transition? Is he just going to rock up to the Olympics in, I don't know, August and be like, oh yeah, I'm here now? Like,
I think he has to play a bunch of the qualifiers though. So he is unavailable for the Six Nations because he has to go off and play some of the qualifiers. You can't just be on the Olympics team unless you've featured, as far as I'm aware. So I read that, yeah, he's unavailable for Six Nations and for internationals, but I think he can still play a bit of club, same way we had like Jennings at the weekend. But I've seen Shay Mullins' Instagram, he's in Australia. I don't know if that's sevens related or not, but they do a lot of traveling, so he could be gone for big portions of the year. It's not like, you know, like he's unbelievable. He's the best player in the world. He's 100% the best player in his position, and he makes everything tick. But I don't think that Toulouse team are going to drastically miss him. They're not going to fall apart without him. You know, they're stacked across the board. You're looking back lines there. You're looking at internationals from around the world, all in the one team. They've accumulated quite the squad of players, and enviable from us sitting here at Connacht.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, look at they're a different gravy at that level. Ulster, I've just come up against the Buzzsaw. Nothing you can do really about that. Let's highlight another provinces who had a massive win, and you know, we have to take your hat off to the Munster. Away to Toulon, come out on top, 29 points to 18, keeping their Champions Cup qualifications hope alive with a bonus point win. And especially considering, you know, what they lost twice over the Christmas period, they obviously have their injury issues, and in, you know, second half performances have been atrocious, and then they come out and beat Toulon away from home when they needed it most. Very, very, very impressive. Westy, is this one of those matches that can turn a season around? Maybe, can you see Munster now going on a pretty, either a good Champions Cup run or at least a URC run here from this result?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think Munster have always been a different animal in Europe. You know, my mind goes back to the CAS game a few years ago where they had to play a lot of like their academy players and stuff, and they got this massive win, but they didn't stick with those players. They didn't translate those results back to the URC. You know, from their perspective, they're still having a pretty decent URC overall. I mean, I know they're not maybe exactly where they want to be in the table, but yeah, I think it could be a real moment for them. But it's just such a typical Munster thing, isn't it? Like, you've 19 players out injured, going away to, you know, one of the best teams in France, three-time champions of the competition. Again, a team stacked with notable players and internationals and stuff. And yeah, they not only win, but they win well. They stay in the fight, and they put themselves ahead, and they mount that pressure on it as the game keeps going. So I think it can do quite a lot for their confidence. But I think they're always a different animal in Europe. I think like this kind of type of result, I think, sums up Munster really well. Like, you know, any other team, not any other team, but most of their teams buckle under that kind of pressure in those kind of circumstances and just accept that this isn't going to be their day. They'll pick up points somewhere else. But yeah, the ability to win those games is something I'm just so jealous of. But Munster just seem to breed in their own attitude all the time. I'm very envious of it.
Yeah, like, let's touch it there, Simon. What is it about Munster? Like, what is, do you think there's anything in particular that they just seem to be able to turn on when it comes to these kind of performances?
I think there's DNA in teams. Like, from a soccer point of view, Liverpool could be 3-0 down against Barcelona in the first leg of Champions League semi-final. I always believe that Liverpool could win that because Liverpool have just done these amazing things time and time again. And Munster are quite similar. I know Rountree had a job in building that back up, but he's done a terrific job in Munster of making them that kind of really us against the world, backs against the wall team that they had been for years. You know, they've chip on their shoulder. They've always played like it. They were one of the top teams in Europe for a while. And then they've been the kind of second best in Ireland for a good long period now since Leinster have grown into from strength to strength. So I think Rountree came in, he got rid of a bad attitude or he got rid of a poor standard of play or whatever it was that he did. He was able to bring this back into the Munster team and kind of pull back and look to their DNA. And it's shown a couple of times in the last 2 years, the fact that they won the league last year, as you said, that Wasps game again, then this game in particular, I think that they are just one of those teams and that's going to continue to exist. And you create your own narrative then, you know, self-fulfilling prophecies. They're never beaten. They believe they're never beaten. They play for the shirt and that exists. And you can start to create that, you know, you can build legacies, but there is just something about historic about the way that they play. And you know, it's painful from the outside to watch, you know, because I'm kind of waiting for it to implode so that we can overtake them, but it just doesn't. And, you know, they looked quality at the weekend to go 10 points down in that game. I thought, oh, Jesus, they're done and dusted now. But they managed to pull it back. They had some quality play. You know, I thought Crowley ran it so well. Nankerville has been such a signing. Like, you know, Fekitoa looked to be coming quite good towards the end of the season, but we moved on and they replaced him with Nankerville. And I think Nankerville was a way better replacement. Fekitoa has so much pedigree in rugby and he's a class player and he did some wonderful stuff for them towards the end of his time there, but Nankerville has come in and he looks like he's bought into it. Him, Frisch look like they're on song, and he's been their player of the season so far for me. And you look across that team, there's really good stories, there's backs against the wall stories, there's players getting chances because of the amount of injuries they have. So they look like right now they're on a good run of momentum and they can build on it, and they can, as they welcome players back like they did at the weekend, that will bring more positive attitudes in camp. So you see the impact that someone like the likes of Peter O'Mahony coming back into the fold for the first time this season, that sort of stuff really helps, and they'll continue to get that all season because of the amount of injuries they have, which is looking for silver linings in a dark cloud. But I think that they're there and they're the type of team that can use those silver linings. Other teams would, you know, lick their wounds and say, oh, it's the world against us, but they seem to thrive on it.
Yeah, no, it's always impressive. Tom O'Hearn, again, outstanding. Like, he has been probably the breakout player, an Irish player in terms this year. Whether he gets into a Six Nations squad, we'll see. We'll talk about that in a little bit after we talk about Leinster. But he's been super, super impressive. And Crowley, as always, has just really, hasn't stopped, hasn't slowed down. He just hit the ground running and kept going, in fairness to him. Last, a province in action, Leinster hosted Stade Francais. They beat them 43-7 with a 42,000 attendance at the Aviva Stadium, which was pretty, pretty good. But I do know one person actually from work was at the, and they said the atmosphere was pretty, pretty poor. Now, a lot of that down to the absolute hammering that the game was. Look, let's talk a little bit about, obviously, Leinster, super impressive. No one's doubting that. And look, Leinster's Champions Cup doesn't really start until they get to a quarterfinal or semi-final. But Westy, what's your opinion on, like, teams not sending over great teams to play games? Is that an issue for you? Do you think that's an issue that the Champions Cup has to look at and potentially change? What's your thoughts on this?
We saw a stat there over Christmas. I can't remember exactly the number, but I think Leinster have played the most players in the URC. Like, and I don't mean that to be like, oh, Leinster can't complain, but teams in general now use more of their squad than ever before. I mean, I don't think Leinster were miles ahead. They had something like 50 players used in the first half of the season, but most of the other teams were there in the high 40s and the mid 40s and stuff. I think Connacht were actually relatively low, which was interesting because we were talking about, it seemed we had quite a lot of rotation. It's not a team sport anymore. It's a squad sport. Like, it just has to be. With the way calendars are, teams have to rotate. And some days you're going to, like, to tie it back, you know, Pete Wilkins pretty much said that, like, they had to pick which game Bundy and Finlay could play, either the Leon game or the Bristol game. Like, now we have quite good player welfare management in Ireland. I know it's different in different countries, but one thing, teams have to be allowed to rotate. They have to be allowed to give players game time. They have to be allowed to develop players and bring players through and, you know, prepare for rainy days. Otherwise, you know, no team is, you know, every 15 years going to have to start off with a new crop of young lads and not have any development during the season. It happens in every league and every sport. Teams don't always bring their best team to a game they don't think they can win. And this is kind of a thing that, like, it actually helps build up the beast of Leinster, because it builds up the myth, right? You think, oh, we're probably not going to win, so we bring a weaker team. And then someone watches it and sees the Stade Francais got hockeyed by Leinster. So then they think, oh, well, we better not, you know, it runs on, and the snowball, or the snowball grows as it rolls downhill. One thing I do think that they could do, like, one of the problems is, as Sam said earlier, that, like, everybody, I mean, one team in this competition is not going to move on to the next round of a competition. You know, like, you'll have your teams go to the round of 16, and have players go on to Challenge Cup. I've never been the biggest fan of the teams dropping down the Challenge Cup. I actually kind of think it devalues that competition to bring players down. I know people are a fan of it. I've always kind of had a mixed relationship with it. I think this is one of the problems here, is because of the round of 16. If you let so many teams through, then teams are going to know they can get through one. I think they said it in one of the games. I think the lowest a team has gotten through on is like 7 points or something. We've gotten through the round of 16. Even when we got through the round of 16 against Leinster, I don't think we had necessarily a fantastic run 2 years ago. So I think when you cast that net wider, you allow teams to chalk off games. Whereas if we kind of had a tighter quarterfinal, semifinal, final from the pool stages, every point would be a little bit more important, I think. So that's one thing you could do to limit it. But I think you can't give out to a team for not giving you the best game possible. Like, teams are allowed to rotate. Teams do it all the time. No, there's nothing you can do about it, except for maybe, you know, making it harder to get through to the next round.
Yeah, that's fair. Sam, any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is media and maybe some fans giving out. Again, harping back to what they'd been doing for the last few years of talking about other teams not preparing Leinster to win the Champions Cup. It's other teams' fault. It's the Stade's fault for not sending their strongest team, you know. And they preface it with, oh, this is the premier rugby competition that should be doing it. But for Stade, it's not. For Stade, we've seen Stade sent a weakened team to Connacht a few years ago and we got a win. And that was one of the wins that we got going through to that knockout against Leinster you talk about. Stade have obviously got their priorities. They couldn't get out. They were on 1 point before the match. It was going to be a tough ask regardless of who they sent. They had to rotate players. And they're in a good top 14 battle at the top of the league there. And that's what they care about. So that's what's going to happen. Teams have their priorities. Leinster's priority is to get that fifth star. And they're adamant that they want it. And they'll move heaven and earth to do it. So they feel that other teams need to be coming in and, you know, forcing the issue for them or giving them the challenges, but that's not up to other teams. And it's the same in the league. If you're continuously hockeying teams with your second and your third string players, it's no wonder Dragons won't send a full team, or, you know, even Connacht or Benetton wouldn't send a full team, because they have their eyes on groups of games in the future. That's how managing clubs works. You look at fixtures and groups of fixtures. Leinster were able to send their under 20s to South Africa because they had already tied up top spot in the league a couple of years ago. And that's what they had done. And the South Africans weren't saying, how dare they send their under 20s to us? You know, but that was what happened. And that's, you know, you don't play your full team every week. You have to look at how to manage your squad and squad rotation, especially given, like, the how hard the top 14 is going to be just physically on them. You've seen how big those teams are. So I don't think that there's anything you can do. I don't think it's up to the Champions Cup or to European rugby to be able to turn around to the likes of a Pete Wilkins or a Leo Cullen and say, no, we believe Niall Murray is your best lock and he wasn't starting. It's a coach's plan on who's the best team on the day, and that's based on your training. It's not a fan vote as to what the best 15 is, and if that 15 is not playing, it's suddenly a weakened team. Coaches, they have horses for courses. They have players doing well in training. They have something that they want out of a player. They have players need rest, and there's all manner of reasons. Yeah, it's definitely a weakened team. You can see that on paper because you don't recognize half that Stade team. Brad Weber's like one of the only ones that I was able to recognize. But Stade didn't think they had a chance. That's fair enough because Leinster is so dominant at home and is playing in a 50,000-seater stadium, and Stade are in a league. So I don't think it's a I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Connacht also regularly benefit from teams doing it, so I'm not going to give out about it too much. Like, if we start giving out about it, start sending the top lads over to the sports ground in January and we don't get anything out of those games, like, but that's how teams like us can survive, because teams have to rotate, and they use games like ours as their opportunity to rotate, and they often do win because they're so strong. Like, Leinster send their seconds to us all the time and they get wins. You know, we don't give out about that because we get the wins. So,
yeah, I totally, I'm not, it's not Stad's fault. I totally agree, because, like, you know, I am aware that Connacht didn't send over their strongest team to Leon, so it would be a bit hypocritical for us to start saying that. But yeah, I think Wes is kind of right. Again, the reason there is the extra round of 16 is because of TV money, and it's all down to more revenue. And that's always the part that pisses me off, is that we view these, this sport as a sport, whereas obviously the people in charge are viewing it as a business, which it is, but it's still never sometimes the best result for the fans. But yeah, it's strange, and sort of kind of you're kind of down if you do, down if you don't, because if you go back to the old format, you're missing out on a full round of games that brings in revenue for teams and TV contracts. But then you're also, as you kind of said, Wesley, devaluing the product a little bit, because let's be honest, group games for Champions Cup anymore doesn't really get anyone's juices flowing. Leinster La Rochelle was good, but that's because of the beef between the teams. It's nothing really to do with the format necessarily, but look, but
I don't think that's uncommon across the board in sports. One of the things that goes against rugby is that every score is worth either 3 or 5 or 7. So your score lines end up stacking up. Whereas in soccer, a 3 or 4 nil win is the equivalent of like whatever, 20, 30 odd score differential. And that happens all the time in the Champions League. And teams from, you know, teams will send weakened teams away to Belgrade because they want that. And in the World Cup, you've got, you know, group stage games where you haven't heard of half the players playing because they're trying to rest. That's how you manage tournaments. And I just think one of the issues with rugby is that scoring equals a lot more points. So it looks really, really bad, you know. But if you're talking about it in terms of tries scored, yeah, Leinster scored a good number of tries. What was it, 6 or 7? You know, that is a good number of tries. But it's all, it looks way worse because it's 50-odd points sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point too. Quick look at the pools before we move on. Pool 1, Bordeaux and Lyon have qualified. Pool 2, you have Toulouse, Bath and Harlequins all qualified. Pool 3, Northampton and Exeter have qualified. And then in Pool 4, Leinster are the only team who have qualified from that so far. So still plenty all to play for a lot of teams. Including Connacht, obviously, depending on the results. Yeah, interesting.
If we managed to get through with one win, it would justify everything that Westy was saying about shit to say.
Yeah, 100%. We don't deserve to get through. But like, there's the fact that there's still a chance when we've lost 3 games, we're minus 69 points from those 3 games in score differential. We only have 1 point, and yet somehow we can still qualify. That is ridiculous. But again, we know why.
Although the other side of that is it keeps the entire of the 4 weeks of group games interesting, because we still technically have a chance, whereas we could be well out and not do anything and send all the shags, and then off the ball would be going nuts because they'd be like, oh, they're sending a week, lads, you know. So
we'll wrap up with, we have a Six Nations squad being announced on Wednesday for the Six Nations, which is only what, two three weeks away, which is pretty crazy. Also, the Netflix documentary is coming out in 2 weeks, which I'm very, very much looking forward to. Although those documentaries tend to be for not really the hardcore fans, so I don't know how much it'll resonate with the likes of us, but still it'll be interesting to see what it does for the sport. But look, we could sit here for hours trying to see what who's going to be selected and all that, but it's a bit of a pointless way of spending your time. But we'll just kind of go around and say anyone that they think potentially would go in. I think Tom O'Hearn maybe deserves that chance, but then the question that always gets thrown back is, who are you taking out from last year's squad to put him in? And that's when it becomes very, very difficult. But before we get into that, like, Westy, do you see Andy Farrell making a lot of changes? Do you think it'll be a very similar squad that we saw at the World Cup, or do you think there will be a bit more of more young blood being brought in?
It's tough for me because I always think this is a really good time to do that, is to kind of rebuild the squad. But, you know, look, at obviously the result of the World Cup was disappointing, but we still have one of the best squads in world rugby, you know. And there are changes that will have to be made, and then there are changes that you can make. I think the likes of Tom O'Hearn getting in, yeah, that's That's a possibility, and then we're definitely well out. I think because of so many injuries on the wing, I think Calvin Nash is primed to not only be in the squad but maybe feature notably in the Six Nations. You know, with Mac away, with Mackie, sorry, injured, with Keith Earls having retired. Now James Lowe looked in great form for Leinster the weekend, but he is just back from injury. I think it's a good opportunity for Nash. I think he's playing really well for Munster, and he was in the kind of I think he was in the summer extended World Cup squad, but I don't think he actually went to France as far as I know. So I think it's a good time for him. And then, you know, you also kind of look then, you look north as well. And I know they had a really bad result at the weekend, but the likes of Will Addison, who's back on form, or sorry, back from injury, it's probably a little bit too early for him to reclaim an Ireland spot. But then, you know, Stockdale, we said kind of last week with the injuries, there's definitely a door or at least a window open for him to get back in. So, yeah, it's a bit of a boring answer. I think Nash is probably the one to watch that would be the most surprising, but yeah, I'd say probably Stockdale is probably in that wider squad as well.
Yeah, on the winger debate, obviously with Mac and Jimmy Bryan, I think Stockdale has done enough over the last kind of few months to warrant a selection again. You know, we've been big criticizers of Stockdale in the past just because we don't think he's done enough, but I think now he has done enough, especially with the injuries. I think Mac and Jimmy obviously would have been in there if they weren't injured, but I think yeah, shoot, Westy.
I don't think it will happen, but I wouldn't be shocked if Bolton turned up in the training squad at some point. He's an unbelievable ball carrier. He's a very different type of winger to the ones we have. He's probably a little bit James Lowe-esque in that he is quite physical. I do again think it's probably too early, but none of us really saw Mac coming either. So I don't think it'll happen, but I wouldn't be super shocked if he was at least in a wider training squad at some point.
There was rumblings at the time of Mac, though. There was like kind of leaked reports,
Yeah.
and like we asked him last week, and he said like no one's been in contact. So I think I'd be shocked too. I'd love it, obviously, but I don't think it's gonna happen. But Sam, anyone that you think might get in that maybe will shock people or maybe not?
Yeah, well, the Tom O'Hearn one, I'd be really into seeing Tom O'Hearn there. I just think what might go against him, because he's obviously that hybrid second row back row at the moment, but when he's in the back row, he's a six. And I think we're so stocked in back row, but we're really stocked at six. And you've got Ryan Baird, who's already kind of that hybrid second row six. You've other couple of players that are eight sixes. So that might go against him just in terms of a sheer numbers game. But I think what he's done this season, he deserves it with the call up. It's too early for it in terms of the renaissance, but I think Mike Lowry is having a little bit of a hint of what he had that first time he got that call up. If this Six Nations was another couple of weeks and he continued to go the way he is, I think he could be back in that talk. Remember, there was the chat about him kind of being the only actual fullback kind of competition for Keenan at the time. And he got into the Ireland squad. I think he went to New Zealand, but didn't play the tests. And then he was kind of off form for a good while and written off. But I'm seeing more of what I really liked about him early on. Stockdale, definitely. Nash, I think, yeah. And then I thought Lachman had a brilliant game at the weekend as well. And I think he probably deserved to be in there. I don't know what the story with Ollie Yeager is, but I presume he'll be in if he's fit due to the fact that I think the IRFU helped the bringing him back sort of thing. And they are looking for, you know, potentially, like I love Finlay, and Finlay's a brilliant understudy to Furlong, but Furlong has not been able to convince anyone that he's capable of staying fit for prolonged periods of time in the last couple of years. And that's just going to get worse with age and degradation of your muscles and your bones and whatever. So I think they will be looking for some sort of continuation project there, and he was brought in on a 3-year deal, so I presume that that was a big indicator of where he is. I don't personally like the Zeebo chat. It's coming from one particular direction. You know, he's having better games. I don't think he's having great games. He's scoring tries, which is always helpful. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's the right move for them. But I'd like to see Daly and Nash in because I love the two of them as players, and I think they both deserve it. And with the opportunity there, with the injuries we have, on the Bolton thing, if there's a development squad, I wouldn't be surprised because I think Farrell isn't, you know, he's not averse to doing that, having players that are in and around the training for a couple of weeks, but then are released back. I'd like to see that, and I think he'd be fully deserving. The only downside is he's quite similar in terms of what he would bring as a winger to Lowe and Stockdale, and they're both guarantees in my mind. And then the other one that, you know, I don't even know if it's a shock, but I think Blade might have pushed Murray enough. I'd say Farrell probably goes with the continuation of having Murray in terms of that experience and the turnover and whatever else. But from what I've heard, Murray isn't necessarily signing back on with Munster at the end of his contract, and he's getting on a case. He's clearly the number one there, clearly the number two for Ireland. And I think Blade has been the number kind of three and a half, four for Ireland in the last while, and probably has more future.
I think Murray signs a contract up also at the end of this year. So
Yeah, and from what I've heard, little whisperings is that they're not, you know, they're not opposed to him leaving if something shows up for him, you know, a swan song payday. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, I totally agree on the Zeebo chat as well. It's like, you know, does 2.5 games make up for 2 years of absolute, you know, being average or even worse? And the fact that he's not exactly young anymore either. So I think that would be, I don't think that would be really a good call, but look, who knows when it comes to these things anymore.
I do think that I'm sick of this 4-year chat. I'm hearing a lot of the captain needs to be the captain for 4 years with a view of the World Cup, and the squad needs to completely rotate. I'm usually quite big on the, you know, mass overhauls of squads, but I think Razzie has done enough in the last two World Cups to prove that you don't need a complete 4-year project, and that you can develop over time, over a year or two, bring stuff in, have bad periods, and then come back with, you know, 2 years, 18 months, and start to kind of build up and run that final sprint into the World Cup. So I don't think the captain needs to be the captain for 4 years. I think the captain needs to be the captain for this Six Nations with a view of kind of building on that. And I think that not mass overhauling is actually probably the way to go, and just keep a bit of momentum, because even though we went out of the World Cup, there was a lot of positivity around the team for the entire last 2 years, and that should aim to continue. You don't want to just get hosed in this World Cup or the Six Nations and destroy the kind of the positive feeling around rugby in the country at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be a ton of change myself, just because Farrell hasn't really ever done that. And yeah, it's a tough Six Nations. You're away to France, away to England. Scotland, you never know. Realistically, chances are they're not going to beat us, but you never know with them. And you never know what you're going to get with Wales anymore either. So it'll be interesting to see. Look, we'll dive into the squad much deeper next week as well.
Just ask what you guys think about what tens we're going to bring to the Six Nations. I just think it's
yeah, it's a really good
with
one.
The injuries at the minute, like, I think Crowley is the starting 10. Like, that's not really a question, because I mean he was the last number two, let's say, before Sexton went. I don't know. I know Frawley was injured. I don't know.
Cullen exactly said it wasn't that bad. Cullen,
yeah. But so what do you do? Do you bring, like, you know, do you bring Frawley and Harry Byrne, neither of whom are 100%, or do you bring, is this now kind of, will Sam Prendergast go in that kind of player development spot? I actually feel really bad for the likes of Carthy, because if he'd been kind of our starting 10 all season, he'd probably be in a good shout to have been brought in, just because he was there. But because
why not so JJ much, then? If that was the case, why not JJ? Like, JJ is playing well this season. He's not, you know, he's not ripping it up, but he's doing a lot.
He's the best kicking stats in the league.
Yeah, best kicking stats in the league.
Of the Irish players, I don't know.
If you're falling down the pecking order and you've gotten through your Crowley and Frawley, you probably don't want an even younger lad as that third choice. You know, at some point, you like the Murray in at nine. You know, having just an experienced head that'll just tip you through games if you're at crisis point is probably not the worst thing. Like, I don't think it'll happen, but I don't think it's the worst shout either.
I think I'd bring Crowley, I'd bring Frawley, and then, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of his, but I think Billy Burns has been playing pretty well. Again, I don't think he has an outrageously high ceiling, but after you get past Crowley, and I think Frawley obviously has the most talent out of a lot of his players. It's sort of like Harry Byrne. Like, we haven't seen anything from him to warrant that. Sam Prendergast is so young, still haven't really seen much from him either. JJ, yeah, again, but JJ has zero international experience. Has he played for Ireland? No caps. So
yeah, but I don't think
Billy
so.
Burns has played a handful of times. He's been playing pretty well the last few weeks and months. Again, he's not going to play, really, let's be honest. It's going to be Crowley, and then if Frawley's in any way fit, I think he'll be the second choice on the bench. So it's not like you're not bringing him with, like, oh, we need you really here. It's unless something goes really wrong injury-wise, you'll need him. But I think maybe, as you said, that bit of experience, that at least been around an international setup before, that might go for the likes of Billy Burns, but I don't know. If it's Harry Byrne, I'll be very disappointed, I have to say. I just haven't seen anything to warrant it.
No one has, well, except for the doctors and the hospital.
And Brian O'Driscoll. He'd have him starting, but look at... Yeah, no, it's a good question, Westy, and it is, again, we are in the post-Johnny Sexton era, so it's kind of like, who knows what the hell's going to happen. I think it'll be Crowley, but...
If everyone was fit, it would be Crowley and Ross Byrne and one of Harry Frawley or Prendergast.
Frawley has to be ahead of those two. I'm sorry. We've seen more from Frawley than we've seen from either of those two, I think.
Yeah, you're starting to see more from him now, but there was a long period of time when Leinster just wouldn't play him at 10 and he was injured and stuff. Like, I'm a huge fan of his in terms of his versatility and stuff, but he needs to start solidifying game time at 10, which I know he's getting a little bit more now this season, but Prendergast will start to come and get a bit more in the next couple of years, but he's still very, very young.
Ben Healy was still here. Who knows? Hashtag scrappy. On that note, we will wrap it up there. Thank you, as always, for listening. Appreciate boys coming on. I'll be back next week for probably a bumper episode with rugby and Six Nations talk. So cheers, boys. Appreciate it.
Night-night.